You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
This episode brought to you by PetFlow, the leader in pet food and supplies.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Every time there's a survey to determine which profession is most respected and trusted, veterinarians always rank towards the top. But does America really have a favorite veterinarian? Yes, according to the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, it's Dr. Carlos Campos of Spring Hill, Florida. After we chat with him, you'll see why he's so special. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's the Daily Doorbusters from PetFlow, the leader in pet food and supplies. Opportunity knocks every day with hundreds of products offered at huge, huge discounts. Up to 80% for your furry best friends. And delivered right to your door. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc. These deals last for one day only, so act fast. 150 brands to choose from. Pet food, treats, toys, and more items than you can shake a tail at. And get free shipping on orders of $39 or more. A new deal every day. Get your pause on today's PetFlow Daily Doorbusters deal. Go to PetFlow.com/PetDoc now.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Campos, thank you so much for being on the show. You are definitely a special person, and I have to admit, our profession has a lot of special people, but you are amazing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, number one, the American Veterinary Medical Foundation had a competition amongst veterinarians throughout the United States. They were not just companion animal veterinarians, such as what you and I do, but there was people in research, there was equine, there was just a plethora of veterinarians. And it wasn't veterinarians recommending themselves or a colleague, it was our clients doing so. And I was fortunate to be on the judging panel, and yours really stood out. Tell us a little bit about who recommended you, who nominated you.
It was one of my clients who I started seeing shortly after I opened my new hospital. Her pet, Fritz, came in for an emergency surgery because of a hernia, and shortly after that, I diagnosed him with Cushing's, and it was something that he had dealing with for a long time, and unfortunately had gone undiagnosed until that point. So she's a human nurse, a wonderful person, and I'm very fortunate to have her as a client, and at that point Fritz as my little patient, so he was really cute.
Well, the interesting thing is, being a ICU nurse, intensive care nurse, she really does know what a doctor should, shouldn't do, and a very caring doctor. So you made a major impression on her and a major impression on all of the judges. Being a veterinarian, it was interesting to see the cross-section of people, of how they affected their clients through this process. If you couldn't be a veterinarian, what would you have done with your life?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. When I was in school at Florida State, I had a backup after being rejected the first time when I applied for veterinary school. I actually decided to go back and get my teaching certificate to become a secondary science and math education teacher. So I guess if I would not have gotten accepted, I would probably be teaching science and math right now.
That's interesting, because people have asked me the same question. And I've always said, if I couldn't have been a veterinarian, I also would have become a instructor, a teacher, because I think you and I put myself in this category too. Those that are people that care about their clients and care about the pets that we're treating, it's so important to engage that pet owner to understand what we're doing, why we're recommending certain things. So we're always educating. We're always trying to take them up that learning curve, because so many people don't understand things that are going on in their own body. They really don't know what's going on inside of their pet's body. So do you find that educating your clients is really a major portion of what you're doing?
It's probably one of the most important things I think that I do. It's something that I try to do with everyone, and you know, basically bringing it down to their level, because not everybody is a doctor, not everybody is a nurse, and they might not have any knowledge whatsoever about, you know, medicine. So trying to explain things as much as I can, and I always tell them, if you don't understand, let me know, because if you don't know what's going on, then I have failed. And it's been very, very important to me that they completely understand everything, and they leave the hospital and leave me knowing exactly what it is that they're dealing with, because once they leave the door, it's up to them to take care of the rest. And most of the time, if they don't understand it, if it's a bad ear infection or something like that, and they don't know that they're supposed to be continuing to do the drops or continuing to give the medication and they stop too early, then we usually are faced with, you know, a worse disease just because it was not taken care of properly in the get-go. So
too many times people feel embarrassed, and I know I feel the same way. You know, I think I'm fairly computer literate, but there are times I look at my machines, my smartphone, going, you're smarter than I am. And I ask a technician, somebody who is expert in this field, to fix it, to explain something. And I know as soon as they start getting into megabytes and all of their own little jargon, I get this glazed over look, and even though my eyes might be open and I'm shaking my head, I know I have totally lost it. I don't understand, and I feel like a fool, and I'm afraid to ask. So it's really a testament that your clients are comfortable enough to ask you and say, nope, Dr. Campos, I don't understand. Do that one more time.
And I do it all the time. And then I spend so much time with them, and they know that, and most of my clients already know he might be a little bit late coming in because he's probably explaining something to somebody else, because he's, you know, basically does the same thing with everybody. And, you know, I love hearing that, because that tells me that I'm doing the right thing. If I wasn't hearing that, if my clients don't feel that I spend the time with them, then I know that I have failed them. And that is, you know, obviously failure is not a word that I want to have written anywhere in my book. And communication is something that is so simple, just talking basically. But I need to make certain before they leave, and I always ask them, is there any other questions, any other problems? You know, let me know right now. If not, call me, email me, Facebook me. And I do have quite a few clients, you know, they get home and it's like, Dr. Campos, I know that you told me this 3 times, but how many times do I have to clean his ears? And I'll be more than happy. I, you know, send a message back really quick through Facebook, twice a day or once a day or every other day. And, you know, they're, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they're, now I know that, you know, our communication has completed and successful. And it was a complete and successful manner, basically.
That is great that you're so accessible to your clients. And I agree, you know, having these new social media, sometimes it's a bane, but oh, I love it. So you're saying, oh, my pet has a limp or it has this funny little rash, and they can try to describe something over the phone. But take a video. Let me see. Because most people now on their smartphones or their iPads, whatever, can take a little video and you look going, oh, oh, that's what you're talking about. No, you need to bring it in right away. I can't fix this over the phone.
That's
but
right.
Yes, that is really helpful. When did you decide to become a veterinarian? I know you said if you couldn't have been a veterinarian, you might have become a teacher, which you are a teacher. But when did you decide to become a vet?
Well, I don't know that I'd remember when I made the decision, because I was so young. My mom tells me all the time when I used to bring her little critters that I would find in the fields and places like that, that I always tell her, you know, that this is what I want to do. So it's before I can remember, which I figure is probably like 6 or 7 years of age. I still get the stories from my mother telling me, you know, remember the time when you brought me those little mice and I told you to bring them back to where you found them when you were a little kid. And, you know, it brings a great smile to my face because obviously I know that from that point forward, obviously, this is what I wanted to be. So
sometimes it definitely does start at a young age. I had the cats from a very early age and took care of the critters myself. And the one critter I used to take care of and used to drive my mom crazy, and now I have to say I moderately detest them, were ants. I used to take sugar cubes out to them and I would feed the ants, and my mother would, yes, not appreciate it. Now I see ants, it's like, fine, you can live if you stay outside. Come inside, you're mine.
Yes.
Besides your mom having this influence on you of taking the animals back, and yes, you know, I can see that you have this tender heart and want to treat animals. Who else maybe influenced you the most in your quest to become a veterinarian?
Oh, goodness. I had a lot of people help me along the way as far as influence me to become one. I guess if I had to pick someone, it was the veterinarian that used to take care of my dogs when we lived in Guatemala. I think it was probably just because I had access to them. Whenever we would take our dogs, I would always be eager to go with my mom so I could see what they were going to do. But that, to me, I saw them as, you know, heroes, basically, because they were able to do all these very cool things with my dogs. And that, to me, I always looked up to them, basically, from an early age, basically.
Now, you just mentioned you were born in Guatemala.
Yes, I was. I was born in Guatemala.
And when did you move to the United States?
I came to the United States when I was 14 years old with both of my parents and both of my brothers.
Did you find that made it difficult for you to assimilate into the American school process and get into veterinary school?
Well, in high school, it was actually a lot easier. The school that I was going to in Guatemala was a very tough school. And the way that the schooling is done in Guatemala also is a lot different than here in America, where we actually had to take 11 to 12 courses. So when I got here and started high school and I only had 7 classes, I was like, oh, what do I do with the rest of the class?
This is easy.
Yeah, pretty much. So I really, you know, enjoyed it here. Obviously, the most difficult part for me, I think for anybody that immigrates, is actually learning the language. I really didn't know a lot of it. I mean, I think I probably knew very little, actually. So not only did I have to go to school and, you know, get the grades to be able to go to college, but I also had to battle through and learn English. And even when I started at Florida State, and that's where I met my wife, she always reminds me, it's like, you used to have such a thick accent. My mother couldn't even decipher what you were saying. And her mom was actually an ESL teacher when I met my wife. And so she was used to, you know, folks with accents and everything like that. And mine was very, very thick, apparently.
Well, you have definitely battled through and you've definitely made an impression on so many of your clients. One of the things that's also made an impression on people, and you're talking about spoiling your clients with all of the contact that you have with them, the education you're giving them. One of the things that we recently just got a sponsor for the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio, it's a company called Pet Flow, and they have a service that I just find so fun. I've gotten one of the boxes, and it's called a Spoiled Rotten Box, and it's a monthly gift club for pets and their parents. So every month you get this box full of all sorts of hand-picked treats, toys, and accessories. When I just got it in the mail the other day, my cats, all 3 of them, were hovering on the box, and we opened it up and they found all sorts of fun edibles. And sometimes, I know, Dr. Carlos, you get a little bit concerned about where are these products coming from? Are they safe? Well, all the edible products are made in the United States, so we know that it's really very safe. And it's $25 basically for $40 worth of products. Besides this Spoiled Rotten Box, PetFlow is the leader in pet food delivery service. They offer food and pet supplies from over 150 leading pet brands, and they're shipped directly to your door. So it's no, you know, need to go out and schlock this bag of food in. in or cases of food or toys, whatever, it comes right to the door, so you don't forget about it. If you're interested in something like this, you can go to petflow.com/petdoc. Use the code PETDOC to get free shipping on all orders over $39. And there's no exclusion, so it's site-wide type of a program. So anything over $39, you get it for free. So it really is a neat service. It's a lot of fun. You have more time to play with your pet. And then if you need to, take the pet to a veterinarian such as Dr. Carlos Campos. Dr. Campos, right before my little paid political announcement, you were saying that you're married, and I had the opportunity to meet your wife and your three, oh my goodness, totally spectacular, well-behaved children at the American Veterinary Medical Foundation's award breakfast, and they sat through a presentation that lasted the usual long awards presentation to the very end, and they never made a peep, they never moved, and I know I was making peeps and making movements in the back of the room. Tell me a little bit about your family.
Well, I've been married to my wife now for 16 years. I met her the first weekend when we both started attending Florida State. So we've known each other quite a bit longer than that. It's actually going to be 21 years now, and she's my best.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And my oldest son, he was actually born the year I graduated from veterinary school. I graduated in May, and he was born in February. So I was...
No pressure. You had nothing else that you were doing your senior year.
Yes. Well, I was very, very lucky to actually be able to get my rotation set up properly, where I was able to get my vacation rotations together. So once he was born, I actually was able to stay home with him for almost 6 weeks.
And good.
Absolutely incredible. Probably the best experience I've ever had with my kids. My little Sebastian, who's my second one, he's now 8 years old, and he was actually born here in Clearwater. He's our local baby. And then the apple of my eye, my little Sophia, we actually adopted her from Guatemala to my country, and we've always wanted to adopt. And I asked my wife to, you know, can we go back to my country and adopt a little boy or girl from there? And, you know, we decided that we wanted a little girl, and we got my little Sophia, who's, like I said, the apple of my eye, and she's phenomenal and such a wonderful, wonderful addition to our family. So,
well, people go to our website, they'll be able to see the picture of your wife and the three children, and they are just all charming and, again, extremely well-behaved. But here you have a wife, three children, a very busy practice, but you're also extremely involved in your community. How do you do this? Why do you do this?
Well, the how, definitely, you know, my wife, she helps me get my scheduling out of the office straight so I can make sure that I can make the meetings and the things that I want to be involved in outside of just being, you know, a practice owner and a veterinarian. Ever since I was in high school, actually, I've always been involved in extracurricular activities. If it's not sports, it's been being the president of student council, and when I was in vet school, being the president of my class and president of SCAPMA while I was there. And then afterwards, I've always felt that being involved outside of what you do regularly, it's something that we all need to do. Making the world a better place, I think, is a job that everybody has. And getting involved in not only organized veterinary medicine, like being the president of an association or something like that, but volunteering, it's extremely, extremely important to me, and I think it's something that maybe more people should do. The amount that you get back from doing things like that is more than you always put in, and not that you ever would do something like that for the recognition, but it is just so rewarding that we are able to do things like that. There are so many folks that are not able to participate and do things just because of physical disabilities or things like that. And I feel lucky to actually be able to do those things, being a coach of the soccer team or volunteer at my kid's school to chaperone. It just exposes me to so many things that I think otherwise I would miss. Effectively, being a veterinarian, too, it allows me to, I think, become more involved in the community because we are seen, like you were mentioning before, as a very respected member of the community. So we are able to affect our immediate environment just by getting involved.
And I think you're serving as such a fabulous role model that here is somebody who is busy, who's getting involved with their community, with their church, is happily married, three great children, and now young children that you're interacting with can go, huh, I never thought maybe that I could do something like that, still have a full life, affect so many people in such a positive manner. I can see why you were chosen as America's favorite veterinarian.
Thank you.
What are some of the biggest challenges you see facing veterinary medicine right now?
Well, I think secondary education as a whole right now is it's really in trouble just because of how expensive it is. Even from the time I graduated veterinary school to now, it's incredible the amount of money that, you know, students have to pay to become a veterinarian. And, you know, just like everybody says, and, you know, I lived this, I didn't go into veterinary medicine for the money. And it's sad to see that some veterinarians that are graduating right now are going to be paying back their debt probably until, you know, they retire. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that that's very conducive for the advancement of veterinary medicine because we are going to be losing a lot of really great minds. I always believe that veterinarians and, you know, just from seeing my classmates and the folks that go to veterinary school, we are not only the top 10, we're actually the top 1% of most classes. And so it's not the cream of the crop, it's actually the cream over the crop, basically, that really gets to go to veterinary school. And I fear that, you know, with this basically inability to attend because of finances, a lot of great minds are going to go into other fields where they are going to be able to pay back their loans. And we're going to lose, you know, a lot of things and a lot of great people that otherwise, because of their love to animals, would have gone into veterinary medicine like, you know, you and I did when it wasn't as expensive to go to school. Even though I'm still paying my loans back, it's nowhere as high as what I've had from even my recent associates. The average debt for most of the students graduating, you know, this year and going forward is over $150,000, some of them $200,000, some of them over $300,000. And that's, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. I think that's going to be your biggest challenge going forward, basically having a brain drain, just not having the quality of people that could have gone. I mean, I for sure know that I would not have been able to become a veterinarian if I was going to be faced with the kind of debt that most students are being faced with right now.
I totally concur because I know when I went through veterinary school, it was a while ago, and thankfully, you know, being able to work during the summer, but it was a lot less expensive, and scholarships and fellowships and all the rest of this, paying it back, it wasn't easy, but mine was paid off in probably the first 3 or 4 years of buckling down, and now I look at my classmates and colleagues going, oh my goodness, how can you do this? A lot of people don't realize there's, at this point in time, only 28 veterinary schools in the United States. So yes, it's a lot harder to get into veterinary school than it is to become an MD. And as one of the stats I once heard, there are more lawyers that graduate every year from law school than there are total number of veterinarians throughout the United States. So those numbers are staggering. On another kind of note to things that can be staggering, in your memory, what is the most memorable animal that you've ever worked with?
Oh, that I ever worked with? Oh my goodness, that would have to be the chimpanzee that I got to take care of while I was in school. I still have pictures of her on my Facebook page. It was incredible. Actually, my oldest son, Xavier, was just born, so I had been changing diapers, you know, helping my wife. And none of my classmates, when we were going through the wild rotation, when the little chimpanzee came in, wanted to do that. And I'm like, oh, I'll do it.
And I'm used to this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. Oh, it was so wonderful. She was such an adorable little chimp. Oh, incredible. I just remember, you know, almost like holding my own son. She would grab onto my fingers and, you know, just snuggle up. Oh, it was incredible. Truly, truly incredible. So if I had to say, you know, tops of all, she's definitely way, way, way up there.
Yes. When I was doing an externship at the Los Angeles Zoo, I had the opportunity to work with Caesar. It was a juvenile lowland gorilla who decided to kind of smart mouth one of the silverback gorillas and just got his hand horribly munched and had to come up to the health center, the hospital. And I would spend my lunches just watching him. And I'm not sure if I was watching him or he was watching me, but the eyes just said so much. It's like, you had this almost kindred feeling of being able to talk to each other and understand each other. Totally concur.
Yeah, I used to pet her. You know, I like I said, I just felt like I was taking care of my own son. It was incredible. It really was.
Wow. What advice would you give someone who's considering becoming a veterinarian?
It depends on where they are. If they are in high school, I would have them definitely, you know, look hard at their finances right now and making sure that it is going to be something that they are going to be able to do so that they can set themselves right, you know, going forward from that path. If they're in undergrad, they probably already have committed themselves to become a veterinarian. So at that point, you know, it's really just study hard so you can actually get in into the veterinary school that you want. It's not easy. I went through being first denied one time, then waitlisted a second time, and I didn't get in until the third time. So it's very challenging. So you need to make certain that you have all the experience that you can get and making sure that your grades are as high as they can be so that when you go and compete for those limited amount of spots, you are going to excel and definitely get involved in extracurricular activities. Being a whole or a more complete student always makes you look better when you go to try to apply.
Great advice. Well, if people want to learn more about why Dr. Carlos Campos of San Francis Veterinary Hospital, Spring Hill, Florida, became the American Veterinary Medical Foundation's America's favorite veterinarian, all they need to do is go to avmf.org. They can learn more about the AVMF, and they can also learn more about Dr. Carlos Campos. Dr. Campos, you definitely deserve to be America's favorite veterinarian. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I really appreciate you having me.
Well, have yourself a great day, everyone who's been listening. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and this is Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner you can be. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.